Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And then today on the show, we have Aiden Klemenko. Hi, Aiden.
Yay. Hey guys.
I'm so excited to chat with you. We've been playing like guest phone tag forever because you're such a busy nice. Man doing awesome, awesome stuff. So, but before we get into all that stuff, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners and giving them a background on who you are and how you get into photography?
Sure. Yeah. I'm Aiden Klemenko. I am just recently 33 years old.
Ooh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Also, just recently living in LA, which for me is kind of a cool thing. I was living on the road for a long time. This is the first time paying rent in about 7 years.
No way. 7 years?
Yeah, big step to be in one place for the foreseeable future, which is exciting and intimidating and fun and scary and easy and hard and all sorts of things. But I'm a photographer and I also do a little bit of filmmaking, but I don't know. It's hard to describe exactly who somebody is, who I am. What do I do? I don't know. I take pictures. I like to travel a lot.
Where did the photography like start? Were you like super young in high school, like a lot of our guests, or did it happen to you later in life?
Yeah, I grew up making movies in my neighborhood with my neighborhood friends and kind of followed that through high school and kind of realized that I loved being behind the camera. I loved using the camera to explore things, to tell stories, to get to know people, get to know a place. And I started taking community college classes. My high school didn't provide, we didn't have any, you know, film classes or anything like that, like most high schools probably.
That's a shame.
And they did, however, have this PSEO program, a post-secondary option, where they allowed you to get high school credit by going to a local community college.
And the community college
had film courses. So I started going to, I'd take the city bus. I felt like a cool kid, you know. I got to leave my high school and get on the city bus and go downtown and go to college with all the college kids. And I don't know, I'm like 16, 17 years old. So I was a little youngin' and I was studying film. And I thought I was going to grow up to make big movies and kind of followed that into college. I decided I wanted to go into filmmaking in college. And as a, you know, program requirement, we needed to spend a year in the darkroom doing photo stuff. And I absolutely fell in love with photography in the darkroom.
Yep, that'll do it.
Yep.
And, you know, I studied film. I graduated with a degree in film, but I also slapped on a degree in photography as well. And since then, have really, photography really has taken over for me. I consider myself a photographer well before I consider myself a filmmaker.
Mm, love the switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one darkroom class.
I'm always jealous of like the guys that, the kids that had the camera. Like when I was a, because I'm a late bloomer to the photography thing and video thing. And I mean, I took photography in school, but as I said a million times on the show, never paid attention, was more mm-hmm. concerned of the girls in the class, yada, yada. But I always had friends that were just like rolling with video cameras, like documenting everything. And it was like, oh, I want to do that. But I just could never, you know, afford it as a...
I have tapes from high school. I'd bring my video camera to high school and just film people, film my friends, film myself.
I'm so jealous.
See,
I don't think I was a cool kid. You know, I don't think anyone saw me and was like, wow, that kid's cool with the camera. I think everyone's like, huh, what is that kid doing? But I do want to dig up those tapes. I'm not really sure how the hell I would figure out how to play a mini DV tape these days. But if I were able to figure that out, I would love to
I can help
to
you
watch
with that.
Them.
Just shoot me a message. Yeah, I got you all day. Yep.
Or I can even do one better. There's a place pretty local to us, Aiden, who does them for like $15 a pop. But they the more you bring in, the cheaper they get, I think. And I just recently found my whole stash from high school. But I never brought them into high school. I was always after school that I was recording.
I'm so curious to look back and see what types of things mm-hmm. were catching my eye. You know, what was I focused on? Was it girls? Was it my friends? Was it, you know, who knows? I can't remember.
Man, I can do you one better. I mean, if you got the time to do it and don't feel like spending a fortune, you can get like a conversion kit on Amazon to just do it right on your computer. I think it goes up to 4K these days. You know, everything's 4K. Wow. So you can take your little video and make it huge. But
yeah, maybe I'll look into that.
Yeah, maybe I will too. Forget it.
Yeah, don't go spending. I mean, unless you really want some. I'm sure if you're paying that much, they're giving you some high quality stuff. Like if you just want it to burn like a DVD or to just, if you're doing a little documentary type thing, you know, you don't need it to be some mega deal when you can just go on Amazon and spend, you know, $50 on a little kit.
So we were talking about high school.
Yeah. So let's see. I graduated high school and, actually before even going to college, I had a bad snowboarding accident in high school. I broke my neck.
Wow.
Yeah, I was a competitive. I grew up in Minnesota, where we have no mountains. And if you like snowboarding, then you're doing park. And if you're doing park, then you're falling a lot. And if you're falling a lot, you're falling straight onto ice because we don't have very much snow. So I was competing and I was, you know, in high school and I was going through growth spurt and I was kind of dumb and reckless and pushing myself. And I broke my neck in high school. And so after high school, I took a year off to kind of just focus on myself, process a little bit. And I don't know, I took a gap year. I went down to South America and traveled South America for 7 or 8 months with a backpack. And I wanted to bring a camera, but I didn't want to bring a video camera. I felt like if I brought a video camera, then I was creating some sort of film. And then all of a sudden that would be the focus of my trip. And so I thought that maybe I would take a still camera down and kind of explore still photography a little bit and be able to not necessarily focus on a single project, but kind of just explore with the camera, creating one-off images. And it was on that. I kind of taught myself, I think, what was it? It was a Canon 30D. Taught myself how to move away from auto settings and kind of the relationship between aperture, shutter speed, ISO, stuff like that. Kind of got to know the camera and man, I thought I was hot shit. When I came back, I was like, oh, I've got a portfolio. You know, this is good. This is great work. You know, I shot JPEG the whole time. The first thing I learned when I got to school was JPEG, and I was like, well, shit. So I went to college and, like I said, fell in love with the darkroom. And it was kind of it was pretty obvious at that point that that's what I wanted to, that's where my interest was. So,
man,
I love that was a requirement too, by the way.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's kind of, you got to understand how cameras work. You got to understand how to tell a story with a few images before you can, you know, tell a story with a ton of images. And so I think that both on the technical side of things and on the narrative side of things, starting with photography is, I don't know, it's I think an important piece of figuring all that out.
Mm.
And I think that they also recognize that by forcing people to take pictures. Maybe they'll get some more photographers and, you know, steer them over that way.
Mm-hmm.
Help kids figure out, you know, a little bit more of what they want to do. I'm not exactly sure. But anyways, it worked for me. I still love filmmaking. When I moved here about a year ago, year and a half ago, I still kind of exploring whether I wanted to kind of retrace those steps a little bit and dive into cinematography and whatnot. But still, I you know, photography is through and through where my heart lies and what gets me most inspired and most excited. I like working with teams. You know, I think that's the thing about cinema that really draws me in. I love working with people. I love working on projects. I love learning from people. I recognize that I am so bad at so many things. And there are people who are so much better. There are people who are so much better at this stuff and more creative or have different ideas and coming together to kind of work on something and bring those different ideas and those different approaches, those different styles together is really cool, you know? And I think that is something that you can achieve with photography, but obviously is much more of a movie magic thing. So sometimes when I feel like I'm, you know, a little too self-focused, I'll try and hop on a video project and, I don't know, maybe just PA or you know, get some BTS work and kind of just feel like I'm part of something for a little while.
That's like a very good point about filmmaking is it is so much a team effort to where sometimes with photography, especially if you're, I don't know, the kind of work you do when you travel, you're kind of alone, right? Like,
totally. Yeah.
It gets like kind of, I would imagine kind of lonely, but then coming together to work on something like that, it's a completely different emotional state almost.
Yeah, I feel like that's why I've always been so drawn to like Avedon or Leibovitz and stuff, because you see their work and they have like a full crazy concept thing. It looks like a movie set when you watch, you know, old school behind the scenes of their stuff. Yeah, I never really thought of it that way before, man. Cool.
Yeah.
Good take on this. I like this.
So how did you start? So you've said that you haven't had a home base in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
How did that process start? I imagine it kept snowballing. And
COVID actually kind of pushed me out of my vehicle and eventually to LA. I was living out of my truck with this goal of traveling South America and photographing South America. I, like I said, traveled South America when I was 18 for a handful of months. I actually spent some time growing up down in Ecuador with my family when I was much younger, for like a year and a half. So I learned Spanish and kind of fell in love with Ecuador, made friends, and we kept going back every year. So I was able to not only make those friends, but maintain those relationships and maintain my relationship with Spanish, with traveling, and get to know Ecuador and surrounding countries. So I have been trying to get a vehicle down to South America and travel South America in a vehicle that I can carry a ton of film, a ton of processing chemicals, have my own space to formulate ideas, work through stuff, and be down there long enough that I can see my own work and see my progress in the projects that I'm working on. I think that having traveled down there in the past for periods of time with backpacks full of undeveloped rolls and not really having any idea what I have is tough. It's hard to work on a project without seeing that work, especially over a long period of time. And so my idea was, if I have a vehicle, then I can process my film. I can see my work. I can kind of gauge where I'm at, what I need more of, what I have too much of.
Yeah.
And I got down to South America and COVID hit. So about a month into this trip, which I was anticipating being a year, maybe 2 years long, got stuck in Ecuador, which was convenient because I have a number of friends still there. I know the country very well. So I was stuck in Ecuador for the first 3 or 4 months of COVID, and it was great. I was living with a friend and his family up in the foothills of this gorgeous volcano on a little plot of land. We had
sounds
goats
beautiful.
And cows and a little stream running through it that we could swim in. It was very idyllic. We were very separated from the rest of we were separated from everything, which was good and bad. It was great for those first few months. But then George Floyd was killed. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Minneapolis was erupting blocks away from my house. All my friends, I was seeing more on my friends' Instagram stories than I was in the news. And all of a sudden, I felt so much further away than I'd felt, you know, right before that. I was pretty content with staying down there the whole time. But then as soon as that happened, I felt like I really needed to get home. And as a photographer, I wanted to be there documenting all of this, you know, kind of unfolding. But flights were still, borders were closed. I couldn't get out of Ecuador. So I had to wait for a little while. And then I eventually did make it home. And within a week of, maybe within 2 weeks of being home, I met my current girlfriend. We fell in love. And and she is also from Minnesota, but lives here in LA. We were both planning on being home. She had come home for similar reasons. We both had kind of individually planned on coming home for 2 weeks. My bag was packed for 2 weeks. We met each other and ended up staying in Minnesota together for 5 or 6 months, kind of just enjoying each other, you know, enjoying kind of that fledgling love, which was really cool. And also Minnesota, despite the social unrest, was a very pretty place to be during the pandemic. And in the summertime, Minnesota really opens up. People have spent all winter cooped up inside. And then as soon as spring and summer hit, everybody's outside and there's a lot to do outside. We have lakes and bike trails, and it was just a really nice, place. So we spent all summer in Minnesota and moved down here to LA. And now my life is completely different.
It's crazy how life can just flip on a dime like that. Yep. I have all these plans. It's like, and then what's the point almost sometimes, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I left my truck in South America because borders were closed.
Talk about that.
So my truck was kind of this little time capsule, right? I was living in it, ready to travel the world, and left it there. And it was there for 2 years. Borders just opened up with Peru and Colombia about a month ago. And so I went down and drove it out of Ecuador and into Peru, where it is now sitting, waiting for Jenny and myself to come down and kind of finish up this trip later this year.
Yay.
Will be a lot of fun. Yeah. Oh, I'm so thrilled to be going back with somebody, you know.
I love
traveling by myself, and honestly, I think I produce better work when I'm by myself. I'm more productive. I don't feel so bad stopping the car, jumping out, and spending some time in a, you know, wherever. But being able to share those experiences with somebody is there's just nothing better than that. I think that when you are in a foreign country and you are kind of constantly exposed to, you know, all sorts of things, a lot of really great things, mostly great things, but also it's hard, right? You know, you're somewhere that's not your own and you're always a foreigner, and that's tiring. And having somebody there to kind of support you in that, and someone who you can support in that, it's all of a sudden it becomes this team effort. And I think it really brings people, it can definitely tear people apart.
I'm sure.
But I think that despite it being hard, it really is an opportunity to bring people together too, which I'm really looking forward to. So
yeah, you're going to have a blast. That's going to be fun. Yeah.
I remember seeing the journey of you in your van developing, scanning, like all right there.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, he's living the life. This is like, that's the best. And he's like, this beautiful country. And I remember you had that little stray cat for a while. I was like obsessed with the story of the little stray cat.
I had a number of stray cats. That was the first one. But just this last time. So I've had three now. Three cats just kind of wander into my truck and hang out with me and stay
so
for,
cute.
You know, however long. That one stayed the longest because I was there for, you know, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe it's all the tuna fish I eat.
Man, I would be bringing them all home. I'm such a sucker.
I know, you're this cat guy right here. Yeah. Forget it.
Come on, guys.
Be making stowaways in a suitcase somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's a process that's taken me some time to figure out. the right chemistry that, you know, I can store dry and then mix down there. It's not going to expire. Mm-hmm. You know, finding the right scanning system that's going to pack away small. I mean, when you're in living out of a truck, space is a, you know, it's a consideration. Every little bit counts. And so anything that you have is, you got to make sure that it is exactly what you need. But I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on things now. I'm able to produce negatives that I'm happy with. I'm able to scan. The hardest part is as soon as I'm done developing and I'm hang drying these negatives, they get dirty. You know, there's dust in the air. They're definitely not the cleanest of negatives. although I do think that's kind of part of the process. And I think that to me, analog photography is so cool because it is a process, right? You know, you have a relationship with the image, not just when you take it, but through its entire fruition, right? You are manipulating that negative as you develop it. Whatever you screw up, whatever happy accidents you find, that is part of the story of that negative, and that, you know, image ultimately, which, like I said, I think is cool and part of that. I think when I was down in Ecuador for those first few months, I did a lot of photographing. Obviously, I was taking pictures. I was I was trying to save my chemistry in my film. I was thinking, you know, this is going to pass really soon, and I don't want to blow through all of my resources here and now. And as soon as these travel bans lift, I don't want to find myself with, you know, no more film and no more chemistry. So I shot black and white because I have, I don't know, a few 100-foot rolls and a bulk loader and a ton of black and white chemistry. So I just shot a ton of black and white. My friend and Diego and Susie, and their three very, very young kids. They were two, three, and five at the time. Wow. I was kind of, you know, like an uncle, I guess. They quickly adopted me as one of their own, and I photographed the kind of weird transition from living in a city to all of a sudden being in this open space, having extremely busy parents to all of a sudden having parents who are around all the time, you know, dealing with the fear of the pandemic, but the joy of having time with family, kind of all of these intersecting themes. I think more than anything was photographing as a way, it was therapeutic, right? It gave me something to do. I would photograph a few rolls each day, and then all of a sudden I'd have a few rolls that I could process. And then all of a sudden I'd have a few rolls that I could scan, and then I had a few rolls that I could edit, you know, and all that gave me something to focus on. And when I came back to the United States, I realized that I, without really meaning to, had kind of a cool little body of work, a cool little story. So those negatives were not the cleanest of negatives, you know, like I said, but they were part of that story to me. They were part of those little imperfections, scratches, you know, maybe I'll have taped them up to hang and then the cat will come in and bat at them, you know, scratch the shit out of them. You know, those little things are kind of part of that story to me. And I came home and was trying to figure out what to do with them. I applied to some grants, and I actually got some grant money from Nat Geo to go back down and kind of flesh it out into an actual project. And now I'm coming out with my very own first book.
Yay!
That's amazing.
I'm excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What before you got the grants and all that stuff, what was your original purpose for going down there and doing that? Was it just a personal thing, or
work? I would love to say that I had some cool assignment and going down there to, you know, document some, I don't know, rainforest deforestation or something, you know, meaningful. Yeah. That's always been something that I've, if there's ever been a goal for me and my work, it is ultimately to create work that has some sort of impact, you know, some sort of promote some sort of change, or I've grown up with a pretty privileged life, and I would love to be able to, I don't know, to give back a little bit, you know, to be able to dedicate my work to telling stories that mean something. But I'm not there yet, you know. People are not sending me on awesome assignments yet. They will soon, guarantee it.
Put it out there.
Until then, until then, I'm doing personal work. I'm trying to do this on my own and show that I can do this and that I'm capable of this. And this was, I still am kind of thinking that the project that I want to focus on is kind of more in the, so less 35 millimeter street photography, black and white, less, you know, gritty, and more think Alex Soth portraiture.
Yeah.
Really kind of exploring these different places through deliberate, intentional portraiture, clean, colorful portraits. So that was the intention before, and that will be again my intention going down. However, I will say after doing a pretty deep Joel Meerowitz dive recently, I think that I want to now accompany those, and I'm not sure if I'll do those portraits on my 4x5 or if I'll shoot medium format. I would love to say that I have the fortitude and patience and money to shoot 4x5 the whole time.
Yeah.
But I think that my recent work in 4x5 has really taught me how much I appreciate the fluidity of a handheld medium format camera.
Yeah.
So I will, whether it be 4x5 or medium format, I want to create these portraits that, like I said, are much more intentional. I'm, you know, having an obvious interaction with my subject, but then pair them with black and white 35 millimeter street photography stuff. Kind of, I don't want to give up that feeling of kind of instantaneous imagery that is maybe off the cuff and a little more fly by the wire. I really do enjoy that aspect of 35 millimeter and also black and white. So I don't know. I think I'll figure it out as I go, but I could very well see it being a mix of the two.
Yeah.
I think those two styles, you know, kind of would really complement each other very well,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Like we were saying about plans, you know, you make one plan and mm-hmm. things change completely, so.
Oh, especially on something like that, yeah.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I'm excited. I'm really excited. I really enjoy having the mental space that you have mm-hmm. when you're on the road for long periods of time to explore more. I wouldn't really consider it a long form project. This will be over the span of probably 6 months, so not too long, but kind of having that brain space to focus on whatever it is you're focusing on. And I'm really looking forward to getting back to that. I've been here in LA and I'm freaking loving it, but man, mm-hmm. it's a city.
Yeah.
It gets, yeah.
And it's so big too.
It's so like, big, yeah. And there's so many people doing such awesome work, you know. It's intimidating.
Totally.
Yeah.
But you were just in Antarctica for like a work thing, right? That's what one of the first times you tried to reach out. You were on your way. What was that like?
I am very lucky to. This was actually my third time down to Antarctica. I'm very lucky to have this seemingly continuous opportunity to go down. It's a pretty amazing place, you know. It's very otherworldly. I think of it as, you know, we've got space, we've got the bottom of the ocean, and then we've got Antarctica, these expansive spaces that are largely unexplored and hold so much mystery.
I love that stuff. I'm watching every, like, Netflix documentary I can find.
Totally. Let's see. When I was living out of my vehicle, it was kind of, was and still am just completely broke, you know, no money. I found this job working for doing actually mostly video work, some photo stuff too, but mostly video work for ultra luxury expedition cruise lines. So it's tourism. People come down, spend all sorts of money wanting to go on these extremely nice small ships to remote parts of the world. And the companies as a service provide a video that it's kind of like a dumbed down shitty version of Planet Earth. I'm producing it myself. I'm shooting all day, come back and edit. And I put together a video that encompasses all of the wildlife and nature that these people saw on the 3 weeks that they were on the ship for. So I'm out filming whales or bears or
that's fun.
I don't know, glaciers or whatever it is, wherever I am, which is great. I didn't really realize that I enjoyed nature photography until I started doing it, and it is very, very fun, and I love it. I'm I'm hooked. Yeah, Antarctica is one of the places that I've had the opportunity to go with that. And that's great. I was down there this last winter for about 6 weeks, hanging out with the penguins and photographing the whales and staring at the glaciers. Yeah. Yeah, it was really sweet. I am.
Are you also like photographing the tourists, like for them?
No, luckily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that.
There are some companies that that focus on the guests, which, you know, would be fine. I have actually often thought that in some of these videos, a smile here or there, someone's face would be nice. You know?
I think
I'm with these people who are, well, myself included, witnessing this incredible slice of life play out in front of us. And I have a giant smile on my face, and the people next to me have giant smiles on their face, and kind of, you know, my passion has always been to photograph people. I love right. telling people stories. And so while I am focused on the wildlife and the nature, I would also like to sometimes include some of those, you know, get an interview with that old lady who saw that whale jump over there because she's ecstatic, you know.
That energy is
really fun to be around and to witness and to partake in. So that's, I don't know. It's mostly just wildlife stuff. But however, I do at the end of each voyage get to present that video to a room of, I don't know, 200 people, and
that's really cool.
So excited. Yeah. I think that in it's, you know, I don't want to sugar. It's not glamorous work by any means. I wish that I was out there with like the BBC or, you know, getting dirty and like, you know, staying up all night to get that shot. And I think that would really be a dream come true. This is so far from that. But I'm still, I'm not complaining by any means to have the opportunity to still go to these places. I will say though, one of the cool parts about it is showing the work. I think that these days, 99% of the feedback or interaction we have with our audience, people looking at our work or taking our work in, is online. You know, it's in comments, whether it be YouTube comments or Instagram comments, or maybe you get a DM from somebody who is really excited, you know, great. But I don't know, being in an auditorium of people, in Antarctica, they're 3 week voyages every 3 weeks. And seeing these people, you know, sometimes they get tears in their eyes. Sometimes you get a standing ovation. It's very rarely my work that is, you know, justifying this reaction. It's much more of the landscape I'm, you know, capturing, but still being able to kind of see people respond to your work like that is such a cool feeling.
Totally.
Man, what a great like learning experience too. Like, I just feel like that you can get so much from that. Just, you know.
Oh, I am a fast editor. Thanks to 3 years of doing this. Yeah. You know, you have to be on your toes. I am ultimately making the same movie over and over and over.
Sure.
In Alaska, Antarctica, I just got back from the Bahamas. Same thing. So it's like, I have a rubric, you know, it's a pretty clean cut narrative and you kind of just drop in different clips. Regardless, it's still fun and it's still tiring, and I don't want to be doing it forever. I'm trying to, as I'm planting myself here in LA, I am trying to do that less. I would love to keep a little bit of a heartbeat going with it just to maintain that access to Antarctica, because I don't want to give that up.
Yeah. Right.
I don't want to give that up. It's too cool. And I'm not, I would love to get down there at some point with a larger production. But until then, I'm happy to do that. However, I can't be, one thing that I'm realizing is I can't be successful here in LA if I'm not here in LA, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's the goal now.
Where do you see your work going in that aspect? Like, do you see, do you want to be like on commercial sets? Do you want to be doing more video?
Is the $1 million question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I know. I ask myself the same question all the time.
I want to be very clear that I have no answers. I am far from a successful photographer. I am so broke right now. It's crazy. But I think that my successes are not represented by dollar signs by any means, or even by having had my work featured in amazing galleries or museums or anything like that. Nothing. It's I think that if I've been successful in anything, it's I've somehow been able to get to cool places with my work. My work has led me to Antarctica, to South America, all over the world, and that's been a really sweet thing.
Yeah, that's a big win. I would kill for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am trying to figure out now how to transition from, I mean, when you live in a truck, you can be broke. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're single, you're in a truck, cook up some rice, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Now things are different, you know, and I'm in this weird transition period where I'm trying to figure out how to translate the work that I've been creating into something that is somehow going to provide for myself and for, you know, my family eventually. I need to figure out how to market myself, you know, and I think that the first step in figuring out how to market yourself is, unfortunately, focusing. I would love to continue shooting street stuff in South America and then wildlife stuff in Antarctica and then fashion stuff here in studios in LA and kind of be a jack of all trades. That would be a dream come true. But I think that a lot of the times people who do that later in their career after they have found success in something. It's hard to focus, you know, it's hard to figure out exactly what I want to do. And I think that right now I work in the Nike photo studios here in Los Angeles, and I have about a 45-minute commute in the morning and then a 45-minute commute in the afternoon. And I've been taking that time to listen to podcasts like this of photographers who I admire, whose works I am either familiar with or not familiar with, and kind of been doing each week I'll pick a photographer and listen to anything and everything that I can about them talking about their work or their history, their path, and then buying a book and kind of studying that photographer each week and kind of hoping to find some inspiration, you know, find my way right now. And I'm not really sure, to circle back finally to your question, I'm not really sure where I see myself. You know, I think that's kind of scary and kind of fun too. I think that I got into photography because it has been a tool that has allowed me to interact with the world in many different ways, you know, whether it be, I don't know, learning about seals in Antarctica or whatever, you know, I can use this tool to continue to learn. And whatever I end up doing, I want to make sure that I don't lose that curiosity, you know, that I'm not all of a sudden finding myself 20 years down the road stuck in a studio and not having any fun. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that whatever it is I end up doing, I still am enjoying it enough to want to be creating artwork first and foremost. I have been doing more fashion stuff here. I'm so used to photographing people who aren't used to being photographed, right? You know, traveling, I have to, I've learned how to make people feel comfortable in front of the camera, or maybe explore some of that uncomfort. Or now here in LA, I'm working with, you know, professional models, and
it's such a difference, huh?
Without any to do anything, you know?
Right now.
Which is, it's just been a funny journey learning this whole new side of this art form. And there's money in it, which is cool. The little bit of work that I've gotten has paid really well. So I think that, and I'm enjoying it. It's fun. You know, like, first and foremost, it's got to be fun. It's got to be something you like. So I would love to, down the road, be a successful fashion photographer who is shooting campaigns that are still reminiscent of my travel work, you know, whether it be street style or whether it be more kind of slow and deliberate. I'm not sure, but it would be really cool to be able to translate that and work kind of to bring those two worlds together and do fashion shoots that pay all sorts of awesome money and use that money to then go and create work that means something a little bit more, that has a little bit more impact than just fashion photography. I think that the work, I would love to spend all my time doing humanitarian work, but there's not a ton of money in that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So fund that with being able to be in control. I think that's another fun part about working in either a studio or just fashion space. You have control all of a sudden. You have control of where you're shooting. You have control of lights. You have control of so much. And that's a new thing for me, right? You know, when you're traveling or when you're on the road, you're observing more than anything. Have control of what you include in the frame and what you leave out of the frame, but ultimately you are observing life unfold and you are choosing how to capture that. But here now I find myself in much more of almost like a directorial role. You know, I'm directing models, I'm directing lights, and I'm shaping the image in ways that I never have. And so that's fun. I'm really enjoying that, and I want to keep doing that. But I want to also still be able to leave that and go observe.
And
create work that is somehow important.
It's the what is it they say, like, you know, your work will fund like your personal work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As long as you can sustain, sometimes we take the jobs we don't want to do so we can do the jobs we really want to do, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
I was just thinking, it's coming up on 20 years since I went to photography school.
Nice.
And I was just thinking about the phases of my life, and like the one constant thing has been photography, and the way it's changed, you know, like I was doing I started with musicians, and then, which I still want to go back to really, when I envision my work, that's kind of where I see it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I transitioned to shooting weddings, and then now I'm in LA, and I've transitioned to like doing like on set photography, which has recently come back into my life when I had kind of like closed the chapter on it.
Yeah.
But just kind of thinking about how the main constant thing has been photography for me. And I get like, I don't know, like emotional about it. It's like the one thing I know is never going to leave me.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible that I say it like that, but I mean, I hope it doesn't. I've had some, like, you know, we all go through like the ruts and everything like that.
Totally.
Yeah. And just like when you're talking about your work and where you see it and where you want it to go, it's like, it's for me, it's like it's always changing, you know.
Yeah.
Man, well, social media doesn't make it easy when you see everyone's success. We didn't used to see it like that many, many years ago. We didn't, you know, we read about photographers or saw a special on PBS or something about some sort of thing. Now every day we see somebody making their dreams come true, and that's like why I just totally abandoned social media, which is, I mean, could be stupid, because
I'm close to it.
It opens so many doors and it gives you so many opportunities when you're there, but it also makes you,
it comes at a cost.
It also made me very miserable, so I had to let go, which sucks, because like I miss it, you know.
I love that, like Jason Lee, because I'm like subscribed to his newsletter, like I'm sure a lot of us are, where he'll be like, I'm taking a break, like don't look for me on Instagram, then he'll be like, I'm back, I've created all this work in the meantime. Like, I'm like, that's a really smart way to do it.
Yeah.
And I kind of love that, like, you know, to be able to step away and come back with the intent of creating work. Like, I'm always like on the edge of being like, all right, I've taken little breaks, but like, I mean, I'll be open. I was, you know, had a pretty rough first trimester and I took a pregnancy. So I took some time away just to, you know, not feel good. And I wish I had, like, I wish I was able to like take time away and go do that, like, you know, create work.
The artistic process is, you know, you can't force it, right? It ebbs and flows. Sometimes it's a trickle and sometimes it's a flowing river. And I think that's okay. And you have to be okay with it. I think the hard thing about social media is it really has trained us to be producing work, you know, and popping out work every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is maybe great for some types of artists, but I think for most of us, that's just not how it works. You know, that's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of our artwork just doesn't, you know, it requires so much more than that, you know, and I'm trying to retrain myself. I graduated school and hit the road, and me and some friends drove down to South America over the course of a year back in 2014. And that was kind of when I first got into Instagram. And ever since then, it's been such a focus, you know, it's been, It's been this kind of, it has been the platform for my work, which I think has, like you said, Tim, kind of opened so many doors. And, you know, I've made so many great connections and whatnot. You know, I've found some work that way, and that's all great stuff. But I would beg to differ that it has been more detrimental to... I feel like it's stunting, right? Like, yes, it is pushing you to create work and push stuff out all the time, which in some way could be seen as maybe motivating, but man, I think that the quality of my work and how I compose, how I approach projects, how I don't even think in, I don't, like, when I finished school, you know, I was thinking about series is like how to piece images together to tell a narrative over, you know, the course of a book or whatever. And now I kept, probably like so many people, catch myself photographing for Instagram. And that is far from what I want to be doing, you know?
Especially with film photography, it's like it's the process should be slowing us down, and we're like, and like, I've got to get it developed and scanned and up as fast as possible.
Totally.
And it's like, that's not even the point. Right. you know?
Yeah, I toy with the idea of getting off of it altogether as well. I think that I would be a better artist for it, but I'm also so invested in it, you know?
It's a hard,
it's a hard thing. And I love getting feedback, you know? And I'm still trying to figure out where I'd be getting that feedback otherwise. And
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still on Instagram, so I'm
figuring out. I'm hating on Instagram.
It was really hard for me to break it. And when I did, I mean, I didn't go on for like 6 months.
I know.
Like, didn't even touch it. And like now, it's pretty cool because I have this podcast. So I get to go on. I get to avoid my account and go on the podcast account. And like, it's so random. Yeah, like the photos that I get to see, it's not like everything. You know how the algorithm is. It builds up everything that you find interesting. Our Instagram is not built like that. So I get to see things that are different, and it's nice, and there's no competition, and it's just, someday I'll go back. I mean, maybe I won't, because the word on the street, Instagram's, you know, dead for photography. Oh, so
it's terrible with all the reels. Don't even get me started. Yeah.
I have all this video footage of all of these animals, you know, penguins and whales and stuff like that. I haven't really known what to do with it. And so I'm kind of playing around with the idea of focusing less on putting my images up on there. I also kind of think that you degrade your work by only sharing it on Instagram. Mm. When you share all of your best pictures or your favorite pictures, your most meaningful pictures on Instagram, you get a reaction and then it's done.
Yep. Poof.
People move on. And I think that I would much rather keep those for print sales or for books or for, you know, if people want to see that my best work, then they have to go to my website or they have to buy my book or they have to get the zine or whatever it is. And then there will be new stuff in that book that people haven't seen. You know, I don't want to sell a book of images that people have already seen, you know. But kind of saving those for cooler, fun projects and interacting with the community that I've built and been a part of for years now through these videos that I'm doing nothing with any otherwise.
Yeah, that's a great idea, though. I love that.
Plus, I love when you're like, oh, you have all this stuff you never thought you'd do anything with. They're like, oh, I'll make a little clip here, and
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Aiden right after this message from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just wanted to pop in quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. We've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We develop some film, we laugh, we talk shop. It's just an all-around good time.
If that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show. Thanks. All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Drews.darkroom. And they wanted to know, what is your go-to kit for traveling overseas with film cameras? Good question.
Yeah, that was a great question. That's a great question. For a long time, it was my trusty Leica M6. I have loved buying and selling cameras for a long time. And
oh, yeah.
The M6 I got back in, I think, 2012, right out of college. And it is a camera that I've had longest. I don't think I'll ever sell it.
You probably paid not that much for it either.
I paid under $1,000 for it with a 50 millimeter Sumilux.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Dang it.
So
the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days. That was my go-to for a very long time. But I, in the past few years, have been shooting a ton of medium format. In one of my earlier travels down to South America, I had a 5D Mark II with all sorts of cool lenses, and everything got stolen. It was about three months into a six-month trip. This is a different one, a different trip. I think I was 23. I was junior in college, and I had taken a semester off to focus on some personal work down there. And all my digital stuff, my whole kit got stolen. My little hard drive that I was traveling with got stolen. All my images were gone.
Jeez.
I was devastated at the time, but looking back, I'm sure that wasn't anything great on there anyway. Regardless, I was pretty bummed, and I sent an email. I had two friends coming down to visit for the last 3 months, and so I sent an email to all of the students and faculty in my photo and film programs in Montana, with the Montana State in Bozeman, and I said, "Hey guys, I'm down here in South America, and all my shit got stolen. Does anybody have anything they could sell me?" And my teacher was like, "You can borrow my Mamiya 7.2."
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh, film. Okay. Maybe I'll shoot film instead." You know, it's hard to switch systems when you are invested into a system, but when everything is stolen, you kind of start to
question,
you know?
Yep.
So, I did get I got a little bit of insurance money back, and with that insurance money, I bought 200 rolls of film. And he sent me down the Mamiya 7 with the 80 millimeter, and I bought the 43 millimeter, which to this day is one of my favorite lenses, and the 150. And I shot for 3 months the Mamiya 7, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I was convinced that when I got home, he would just be like, "You know what? Keep it." Unfortunately, he didn't. I had to give it back. And it took me until just a few years ago to pick up one for myself. Luckily, I did so before the price hike. I think I got it for $1,600.
Oh, wow.
Woo.
Yep. Yeah. And so that is now my go-to medium format camera. It's small-ish, right? You know, it's it's a large 35 millimeter camera. It's a small medium format camera. The negatives are gorgeous. The body is not very large. It has its limitations. The lenses are fairly slow. They're all, you know, around f4.
Yeah.
And at first I was thinking, you know, that's not going to really cut it for portraiture. I really like to have sometimes some selective focus, whatever. But I've been really surprised at if you set your, say, 80 mil to minimum focus and put your subject right there at minimum focus, you get a waist up shot with really nice out of focus backgrounds. It's nicer than I would have expected an F4 lens being. But that has to be probably my favorite go-to camera. I will say, after having been in Antarctica this last winter, my trusty Pentax 6.7 is rapidly climbing the ranks of favorite camera. It is
another great camera.
Not a very friendly travel camera. It is a chunk of metal. But the images that you get off of it are so nice. When I go down to South America later this year for this trip, I will bring my Mamiya 7 as well as my Pentax. The advantage of having a truck, obviously, is I can carry a bunch of shit with me. But
the big boys.
For
light travel, Mamiya 7. If I can afford to roll a Pelican case down, then Pentax 6.7. Long-winded answer.
Great answer, though.
Yeah. Man, well, I guess we got to ask you the two. Well, we probably heard your answers
here. Yeah,
you got
to pick one here.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll give you the... It's a two-part camera question. The first part of said question is the desert island. Is there one that, you know, you just can't live without? What's it going to be and why?
I would probably say the... Well, I don't really know. There's not an easy answer.
Nope.
I would say the M6, just because it's been the camera for me. It's been the camera that has lasted the longest for me, that I haven't sold or traded or broken. You know, it's the camera that I've dropped the most. It's the camera that it's been with me for almost my whole photographic career. And I would say that it's probably that. I love medium format negatives. I love large format negatives, but man, there's something about the small form factor and versatility of, and you know, film's expensive these days. And if you're on a desert island, you don't have unlimited supplies of it. You know, you get more exposures each roll with 35 millimeter. So
yeah.
I was almost scammed for these like offer up and Etsy, they have insane deals. And I'm like, is this real? I text like my friend, like Raphael. I'm like, this is real. And he's like, no, don't do it.
No, like, don't fall for that. When you sent me that, Hasselblad. And I was like, there's no way. There is no way.
I'm just like searching for that deal where.
Not anymore,
I know,
girl. Like, not
I don't
anymore.
Know what I have. This is my uncle's old thing. I'm just going to get rid of it.
Yeah.
But good answer. I was like, you better stay the M6.
The Mamiya 7, the Mamiya 7 is close behind. You know, it is such a fun camera. It's, I don't know. The negatives are absolutely gorgeous. I for a little while tried to shoot 6.45 after shooting what I think the first camera I got after that trip when I have to give the camera back was a Contax 6.45 and beautiful camera. But I felt like the negatives were closer to 35 millimeter than they were to 6.7.
Yeah.
I felt like big 35.
That's why I don't shoot 6.45. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Part two. Part two is the old white whale camera. Is there anything out there that you've always wanted to own or shoot or, you know, what is it and why?
You know, lately, not to like further hype it up, but maybe the X-Pan. Uh-oh. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Dude, me too. I'm still right there.
I mean, it's insanely and ridiculously expensive right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that it is justified. I think that, I don't know. I've been talking to a number of friends who have them, who have shot them. And I think that it's a great camera for when the application is right. But not every picture needs to be a panoramic.
That's what how I feel about it.
Yeah. my friends who have owned them have ultimately sold them because it's a great camera if you can have it in a kit of other cameras. But if it's the only camera you have walking around with, then not, like I said, not every photo is going to be necessarily the right application for panorama. So I would say probably that. I don't know. I'm curious about all sorts of cameras. There's so much out there that I would love to play with. I don't know. Yeah, probably X-Pan.
Me too.
X-Pan's a good answer.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
Like it. Aiden, this has been, like I said, so glad we finally got our schedules to line up and we got this in the books because your work is absolutely stunning. If you guys go check out, find Aiden on Instagram still. Go check out his work and his website. Go to his website too.
Thanks. Working on a new website right now. Right now, it's and will always just be my name, Aiden Klemenko. So, AidenKlemenko.com for that. And then Instagram for now, Aiden.Klemenko.
For now.
Yeah, for now. Get it while you can.
Awesome. Get it while you can. Love it. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. They're both at Timothy Makeups. I have some older YouTube stuff, YouTube videos, some fun stuff. I was going back and watching my old stuff.
You got to come back.
I need to start. Yeah, I got to start doing it again. But easiest way to find that is just go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of my stuff there. Chris, where are you?
So I'm Chris B. Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We're Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. We also have a Facebook page. In a group you can like. That is it for us. Aiden, thank you.
Thank you. Guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys
having
me on.
This has been awesome.
Flattered. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one. Bye. Bye.
All right, that's going to wrap up this week's episode. Aiden, thanks for coming on and telling your story, hanging out, nerding out about photography. We really, really love what you're doing, producing some great work. And it was just great hearing your plans for the future. It was just very inspiring. Such a great, great conversation. Chris and I thank you so much for taking the time to come on. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only develop and hang nights and a bunch of other stuff over there. For the Patreons that already help support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. As previously said before, Patreon is the best way to help support the show. If it sounds like something you're interested in, patreon.com/analogtalk. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for hanging around. And we will see you next week with an all-new episode. Later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.